This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So I don't know that we're going to be irrelevant anytime soon, but when I see that letter that Kurt forwarded to me, I think of something that Major Kehoe wrote for one or more of the issues of NICAP's UFO Investigator, which is, I want to put NICAP out of business. He was under the belief, very naive it turned out, but I think it was naive when he voiced it, which was, if you got Congress to investigate, they take care of it, they reveal the truth, and I can go back doing whatever I'm doing. I guess, in his case, writing mystery fiction or something like that.
Sure. Now,
but in this case, it's pretty clear that whatever the Pentagon is doing is only a microcosm in terms of the UFO mystery.
It is. And again, Gene, you touched on something that's extremely important and something I really try to drive home, so I'm really glad you brought it up. And that is, if you look at the, and I use the term disclosure, and I always like to delineate disclosure with a lowercase d, not disclosure with an uppercase d, with the disclosure that they're acknowledging that there is a phenomenon out there. When you look at the Pentagon report and subsequent discussions and talking points, it's almost as if you didn't realize or know any better, the phenomenon started in 2004 with the Nimitz incident. And, of course, we know that's not the case. And as I alluded to earlier, looking back on these historical cases, we can gain new insights. There's been much to do about Dr. Avi Loeb and the Galileo Project and others. It's interesting because many of those individuals and institutions have stated, we're not going to look back at the past. We're only going to move forward with scientific acumen to examine the UFO subject. With all due respect, I think that's somewhat short-sighted. As I mentioned, you know, at the top of the show, this is the 75th anniversary of the UFO subject. Are you telling me that in 75 years worth of civilian government case files, not just United States, but worldwide, you're telling me there is nothing of value in those files? And one more follow-up question. How can you say that if you haven't looked at those files?
Yeah, that's a good point. And so there's no doubt, and I think their point of view is that it's been polluted with hoaxes and exaggeration and mistakes and things like that, which kind of brings me to a point I wanted to ask about. I know in your triangular UFO research, you've targeted specific things to help weed those out. So can we talk about how you get to the genuine cases?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great question, Kurt. First and foremost, I mean, as any investigator worth their salt knows, we don't go in looking for extraterrestrial craft. If anything, we take a UFO report and we try our darndest to find a prosaic conventional explanation, and much like the Air Force was ostensibly doing. But in many cases, you know, when we have these triangular craft that are being described that are apparently low altitude, completely silent in rural settings where there's no background noise drowning out the sound of an aircraft, when there's no exhaust, when there's no sound. These are anomalous characteristics that bear out time and time again with many of these. Now, I will say, in contrast, there was several years ago a professional photographer that took a photo of a high-altitude triangular aircraft moving over Wichita, Kansas. It was, again, high-altitude, not low-altitude, like many of these are described, and you had characteristic contrails coming out the back. So clearly, if it's high altitude and you see contrails like a conventional aircraft, it is probably some type of military vehicle. We have triangular aircraft. We have had triangular aircraft. In fact, in my new lecture, I talk about all the delta wing configurations that were existing back in the 1950s and 60s. One of the most prevalent was the Vulcan bomber in the UK. And ironically enough, in the flying saucer clubs in the UK back in the 60s, when triangles were being reported, which, again, many people don't know about the long history of them, they were calling them in the UK silent Vulcans, because whereas they were large, they were triangular, they were completely silent, much like the reports today. I alluded to the fact that I put a new presentation together. And again, the timing of this show is great since we talked about my book the last time, shortly after it came out. The last year, I have gone through an exhaustive review for the first time ever of the NICAP CUFOS case files. I have spent weeks and months going through these files, news clippings, military reports, etc. I found over 100 triangular UFO reports from 1947 to 1977. And the reason I stopped at 77 is for a very valid reason. I had the opportunity to be on the TV show Unidentified for the History Channel a couple of years ago with Chris Mellon. And Chris Mellon came here, and we were going through some of my research on triangles. In that show, in the final edit, they had a UK researcher that stated that, well, the triangles really weren't being reported until the 1970s. And ironically enough, it coincided with the release of the movie Star Wars, where people saw this huge triangular Imperial Star Destroyer coming into view. So David Clark, who was the researcher, basically made the assumption that he feels popular culture shaped the UFO reporting, and that's why we have reports of triangular UFOs. Well, I started to go from 1977 backwards to 1947, and I'm here to tell you, as I'll be lecturing across the country this year, I'm going to show you never-before-seen case files from NICAP, from CUFOS, going back to 47, whereby we're not only seeing triangular craft, but we're seeing triangular craft exhibiting the characteristics that I outlined in my book in 2013 based on the available data sets I had at the time. So as I like to say, it was the best outside validation for my research, because the characteristics that I outlined in my book are exemplified in these, if I can say, new old reports. And so there's clearly a pattern here of characteristics and flight dynamics associated with this subset of triangular UFOs.
I was never that interested in triangular UFOs, and it caused me to overlook your book and your research initially, and I've come to sense appreciate it, and I see that one of the things that you that you're doing there, it does help to find good cases, because these are not like so often a light in the sky can appear spherical or saucer shaped and something. So you're dealing with something a little more distinct, and it's less likely to be a misinterpretation of a star or astronomical body.
I agree, Kurt. And in fact, I referenced the triangular UFOs as it falls into the category of unambiguous UFO sightings. To your point, many of the reports in the NICAP files, and I think you and Gene alluded to this earlier, a large percentage of these UFO case files describe something that looked like a flat fireball, flew like a fireball, disappeared like a fireball, and was seen over multiple states. Well, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. There's no need to look for an extraterrestrial explanation, but there's many fireball sightings, meteor sightings, balloon sightings. I know people laugh at that because of the ubiquitous Air Force explanation of weather balloons, but there were many weather balloons that were sighted and high-altitude research balloons that were sighted that were demonstrably proved to be atmospheric high-altitude balloons. One was a triangular French balloon, meteorological balloon, that was sighted over Madrid, Spain. And this garnered tons of media attention. It's probably the most well-publicized and documented triangular UFO sighting, if I can use that term. But we have an official letter from the Meteorological Department in Spain that states, and it's signed by the director of the Meteorological Society there, that it was a French high-altitude balloon that had basically generated all of these UFO reports. And there was a photo that circulated at the time, and the photo certainly looks like other photos of this triangular object, which basically it was initially described as triangular, but really it was an inverted pyramid. So you have this kind of upside down triangle with a point at the bottom. And ironically enough, it bears striking similarities to a Soviet military piece of film footage over Riga, Latvia, that was filmed, actually, I believe, within 30 days of the Madrid sighting. With all due respect to Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp, they referenced this as being an interesting corollary to the night vision footage of these pyramidal UFOs that were being seen. But I believe that the most prosaic explanation for that Russian military footage is it was an atmospheric balloon.
Let's have this explanation, then we'll have more with David, Gene, and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Are you ready to retire? Inflation is picking up, the markets are volatile, and the dream of a comfortable retirement is harder to attain than ever before. The stock market goes up and down is beyond your control. But you're at a point in your life where you can't afford to make big financial mistakes. I'm Al Abaroa, founder of Knight Strategic Wealth. Our investment strategy allows you to go up with the stock market, lock in your gains, and when the stock market goes down, your investment won't lose a dime. This works for your investments, savings at a brokerage firm, or even money at a bank. It's simple, it's safe, and that's why savvy investors work with us. Want to learn more? Text FREE to 833-898-0500, and we'll send our retirement readiness kit directly to your phone right now. If you want to help build a retirement portfolio that will go up with the market and literally never lose money, get our retirement readiness kit today and see how this strategy can help secure your future. Text FREE to 833-898-0500. Text FREE to 833-898-0500.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hard-working people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now that you've had those explanations, David Marler continues his fascinating discussion. He's the easiest interview ever. You just say, go ahead, and you just sit down.
Well, let's throw a curveball in here. So we hear a lot about whistleblowers, and sometimes they're anonymous, and they come up with sensational stories. Usually you're not able to verify any of the information. Do you have any examples of a whistleblower whose stories, you know, was proven to be true?
I don't think I've had anybody approach me that was a quote-unquote whistleblower, but, Kurt, I'm really glad you brought that up, because unlike a lot of researchers in this field, and we don't need to mention names, I think we all know some of those individuals, when you start lecturing and writing books on a perpetual basis predicated on quote-unquote unnamed government insiders or unnamed individuals or individuals that want to remain anonymous, I have to be very suspect. As we were touching earlier, when it comes to information, the information is only as good as the provenance that you can establish. And there is this propensity for people to gravitate towards the sensational. They love to hear the whistleblower stories. They love to see these purported MJ-12 documents surfacing left and right. But if you can't verify the source of the information, you can't verify the information itself. I'd like to think I'm the antithesis of these researchers that are out there that basically promulgate these spurious government documents and these so-called government insider claims. I'm not gullible in the sense that if someone tells me something, I just readily believe it. I try to verify it or I try to corroborate it with other information. There's a history of hoaxers and liars and con artists. Unfortunately, they still pollute the field today. One of the best compliments I get when I've done lectures over the years or if people contact me with regard to my book, they state, I love your research because you always cite your references. When I was in college, I mean, that was just research 101. You write a paper, you cite your references. If people have questions about the veracity of the information, or for that matter, if they want to take it to the next level, you need to point them in the direction so they know where to begin. In all of my lectures, for those that have ever attended any or seen any online, I always have my references at the bottom of each slide. Conversely, we see some of these researchers that quote these insider information, and you have no recourse to verify it, to properly vet the material. And so you're quite literally left with, I either believe it or I don't. This should not be a subject predicated on belief. We should be able to use our brains effectively to weigh the information, to vet the informational sources, and then try to make sense out of the subject.
That's a big, big problem. There's just so many of these campfire stories that circulate and then recirculate when someone discovers them later. It goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about mutilations earlier and that it could have been attached to a government project, did you get the suggestion that UFOs were used as a cover story for this operation?
Yes, and again, I'm saying this not based on my research, but the information of Greg and Gabe Valdez. That was basically their assessment after Greg's late father for decades followed the subject here in New Mexico. Yes, they were using UFOs as an effective cover, which is not the first time that we've heard of that. The SR-71, when they were first doing their initial high-altitude test flights, before it had the black carbon composite on the outside, it was highly reflective. And so some, not all, as the CIA and many other people tried to allude to back in the 90s when this all came out, they were trying to make it a blanket explanation for all UFO sightings back then. But for some high-altitude sightings, if you had a pilot flying along over, say, Mississippi, and they say, we saw this silver, glistening, metallic object flying faster and way higher than any aircraft we knew of at the time, they were telling the truth. But it wasn't extraterrestrial. It was the SR-71. Historically, we've seen the UFO subject be used as a cover. In speaking with Greg regarding his father's research, there is a very logical reason why they would want to, and I say they, I don't know which specific group within the military were doing this, if in fact their assessment is accurate, but there's a very valid reason for wanting to have a cover story. This was occurring in the mid to late 80s. There were international treaties banning the testing and use of chemical and biological weapons. So if Gabe Valdez's research is accurate and his assessments are accurate, they were conducting studies and tests that were in complete violation of international treaty as it relates to chemical and biological warfare testing.
there have been examples, you know, you mentioned the spy planes, and there were also balloons that, spy balloons, that they were happy to let be mistaken for UFOs and wouldn't issue a correction. I've been unable to find anything where there was an active deception to promote UFO belief, and that, you know, this operation, if the cattle operation was the case of that, that's one of the few, but sure. The documentation is elusive.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Again, I always preface by saying that's just based on Gabe Valdez's assessments. I don't know if, in fact, it's true, but it certainly makes a lot of sense. And again, we try to find prosaic explanations for a lot of these things, you know, especially when we look back historically at these cases, these UFO reports from, say, the 1950s and 60s. I mean, we were deeply immersed in the Cold War. So in looking at these UFO reports, we have to always take a step back and consider the climate, the environment that these were being reported in, that would lend or suggest the possibility that the government would love to use UFOs as an effective cover.
There was one researcher, he's not well known, James T. Westwood, and he came to the conclusion that most UFOs were military operations, and particularly the sightings over international borders were incursions of spycraft or something like that. He went to an extreme, but I think there's probably something there.
Yeah, that's interesting. One of the collections I obtained is the correspondence collection of Dr. Leon Davidson, who was a Columbia University chemist.
The infamous Dr. D.
Yes, yes. He actually lived here in New Mexico. He worked on the Manhattan Project. He had kind of a blanket explanation for many, many years that he clung to, in that all UFO sightings were CIA psyops operations.
Uh-huh.
I think we need to be careful with any one blanket explanation for the UFO subject. I think it's a diverse subject with many explanations, meteors being one, prosaic things that people are reporting that are not anomalous in any way, shape, or form. There might be deception at times using UFOs as a cover. Anytime, Kurt, that someone uses like one explanation for all of it, saying it's all military, I question it. And even with the triangles, I always start off my lectures by stating there's three sides to a triangle, and I think there's three possible explanations. One, it could be military. The other one, it could be someone else's technology. Or number three, which I think is the most plausible, it might be a mixture of both.
I met Dr. D, because I think at the time he was living in White Plains, New York. He
yes.
came out with Project Blue Book Special Report 14 that was very notable. And he apparently was also a source of the information that allegedly led the one and only Jim Moseley to believe in the secret weapon theory. And I remember one key conversation we had. I don't know if it was at Dr. D's home or somewhere else that we met up with him, which was very significant. And in retrospect, I wish I remembered more of it, but we'll get on to more with that in a moment.
Sure.
With David and Kurt and Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, is now under fire from Russian forces. This man explains the scene.
He went out just for half an hour, and then shelling began again.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken authorized $350 million to help Ukraine fend off the Russians. Over the past year, the U.S. has given more than $1 billion to security assistance to Ukraine. Authorities say columns of Russian troops with heavy weaponry are approaching major cities in the country. President Zelensky recorded a defiant video on the streets of Kyiv.
We will not lay down the weapons. We will defend our state.
The UN says 120,000 people have made it out of the country, mostly women and children, because men have been ordered to stay behind to fight the Russians. This is USA Radio News. The CDC is announcing its loosening mask guidelines for U.S. residents, allowing most people to leave their coverings behind in indoor public locations. Previously, the CDC recommended wearing masks in public indoor spaces like movie theaters and churches and in areas with substantial or high transmission of the coronavirus. During a briefing at the White House on Friday, Press Secretary Jen Psaki was asked if there's any concern that people will take this to mean that the pandemic is over in the U.S.
There are still people dying every day of COVID. There are still immunocompromised populations. But what we are trying to work towards is a period of time where we are, where COVID is not disrupting our daily lives.
About 65% of the American population is fully vaccinated, and over 93 million Americans are boosted. You're listening to USA Radio News.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
The cliffhanger, Dr. D, Dr. Leon Davidson. And Jim was kind of mad at him, saying that you fooled me into believing that UFOs were secret weapons. And at that time, it looked like maybe Leon Davidson, Dr. D, was suggesting something being more to it than just the one explanation. But I only remember that one conversation. I remember that Jim moved to what we call a 4.5D explanation, something beyond extraterrestrial. But that's the last I heard from Dr. D. David Marler, go ahead, please.
Gene, I'm envious. I wish I would have had the opportunity to speak with him in person. I will tell you, though, as someone who has met with him and spoke with him on the subject, this is another one of those collections that has a fascinating story. I was put in touch with a self-proclaimed dumpster diver in New York State. And I can't remember now, it's several years ago, but it was a friend of a friend that somehow got me in touch with this individual. He claimed that he came across all this historic UFO material as he was dumpster diving, which apparently he did for a living, going through dumpsters and finding valuables or things that he could sell. And he, on a series of nights, were going out to these dumpsters where apparently Leon Davidson's family were dumping a lot of UFO historical materials. Now, officially, his collection resides at the university in New York. Is it Columbia University, I believe? He has his collection there. But if you look at the inventory list, It mainly consists of books and journals and things that are just general publications that most UFO researchers or collectors have. The one thing they do not have noted in their inventory is his personal correspondence collection. And I'm happy to say that collection is now here through the efforts of this dumpster diver and with a fairly large purchase that I made from the individual to purchase the collection from him. There's information between Kenneth Arnold and Leon Davidson, Jim Moseley, Gray Barker. It's a veritable who's who from circa 1950s, 1960s ufology.
I just wonder what Gray Barker had said, because Gray was always an interesting character. One of the more interesting people of that era.
Absolutely. But there's tons of correspondence. And in fact, Kurt, you'll appreciate this, having obtained some research from the archive here. There's a researcher in California that's writing a book on Cold War scientists that looked into the UFO subject. And he reached out to me somehow through his research efforts online. He said, would you have anything that would kind of fit the bill with regard to that? And I said, well, I said, I have the correspondence collection of Dr. Leon Davidson I obtained about 3 or 4 years ago. He almost fell out of his chair. He wrote me back excitedly. He goes, David, he goes, I contacted the university in New York trying to obtain his correspondence, but they said they didn't have it. I said, well, I obtained it through a dumpster diver, and luckily I was able to support his writing of his book, which I think will be coming out in the near future. But he was wanting to get those personal insights and thoughts in Leon Davidson's correspondence. And I was, again, I, as one researcher to another, I'm always happy when I can fulfill those needs and provide that rare material.
Speaking of Dr. D, what's your assessment based on the material that you have?
With regard to his theories on UFOs or just Dr. D in general?
Both.
Well, I think he was an honest man. I, again, have not met him, Gene. Again, I'm envious of you in that respect. I wish I could have had that opportunity. But I've talked to a number of individuals. Tom Tillien interviewed him, and Jan Aldridge, and a number of others. And I think he was an honest, sincere, intelligent man. I don't agree with his idea that it was just all CIA psyops or secret military to explain the entire UFO subject. It could explain maybe a small percentage. But again, I'm not into blanket explanations for the phenomenon. But I think he was a sincere, honest man. You know, he was a patriot. He worked on the Manhattan Project. In fact, I have to tell you, beyond UFOs, I have some of his personal mementos. And again, for anyone that's a history buff out there, just think about this. The material that I received from this dumpster diver not only included UFO correspondence, I have a certificate from the War Department commending him for his research efforts to help further the Manhattan Project. This was in a dumpster. I have his college diploma and his high school diploma. This was in a trash dumpster. I have a photograph of Leon when he was very young. I would say, looking at the picture, and I'm happy to share it with you or Kurt, Gene, it's a very early photograph of Leon. He still had all his dark hair, so it gives you an idea how young he was. And he's sitting in a restaurant in New York, and he's surrounded by all these individuals who I didn't recognize, but all the gentlemen signed this card with the photograph. And it said, good luck to Leon heading to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, I believe is what it said. So these were all apparently Manhattan Project scientists that were working with him at the time.
Oh, boy. Okay, so David, now you need to give us your PSA about how everyone needs to ensure that their collection is going to wind up in good hands.
Oh, Kurt, thank you. I mean, that I have to tell you, that's my mantra anymore. The one thing I tell people, whether it's researchers or family members whose family member might have been involved in UFO research if they're sitting on information, and Barry and Jan echo this as well. The three of us say it all the time. If you have historical material or UFO material that you think could be of use to those researching the subject, make succession plans for it, whether that's to go to an uncle after you die so they can keep it, or find an institution, a researcher, or an organization to donate it to. We're talking today about the collections that we've saved, but I'm here to tell you, and Barry and Jan would echo it if they were here with me now, the vast majority of collections, unfortunately, have wound up in the trash. And I say that based on Jan and Barry reaching out to the survivors of researchers that have passed over the last several decades. in most cases, when they reached out weeks or months after the fact in order to give the family time to properly grieve, they would ask them, you know, what happened to your uncle's UFO material? It's sad to say, and I'm just gobsmacked to think that people do this, but many times they were told, oh, you know, once our uncle died, we just threw it all in the trash. Nobody in the family was interested in the subject.
Horrible.
So we're slowly, steadily, you know, trying to preserve the history of the subject. And whether it's UFOs or any subject, if you don't know your history, then, you know, where are you as far as a field of research? And so, you know, we're trying to collect and preserve these bits of information, not just for historical sake, but as I like to say, I view each one of these case files, the ones that aren't explained in prosaic terms, as data points. The more data points we have, the more we might be able to discern patterns, as I've written in my book and in my subsequent research regarding triangles. And maybe those patterns aren't going to give us the answers, but it might lead us along pathways that could ultimately, decades from now, lead to answers. But, you know, without those data points, what do we have? When you think about it, the whole subject, going back to 47, the modern era of ufology, it all started with people seeing unconventional aerial objects in the sky. So what's the best source of information? The raw eyewitness reports that we have that documented these sightings.
One thing I should point out, too, we're going to break in a moment, and that is that quite often the UFO reports you see in a book are basically copied from other books. So you've got generations of copying. In each case, you have the chance that details are lost, changed, forgotten. And, of course, you know, people like Kevin Randall, for example, has done a chasing the footnotes kind of project where he goes back and tries to find the original source for a case to get a handle on what might be responsible for it, whether it's unexplained or not. And more often than not, finds out that the version you read in the book barely resembles the version that started it all. So by you, for example, having original investigative reports, each of which may have been summarized in NICAP's UFO Investigator or elsewhere, you may have a totally different picture of what might have happened.
You're absolutely right. That occurs so often in this subject and other fields as well, I'm sure.
We got a break here. We got David, Gene, and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
And of course, the other thing about the UFO field is not just the raw cases. Like, for example, you've got Dr. D's letter collection with correspondence with Gray Barker and Jim Moseley, for example. That's the culture of UFOs, the people involved in the field, and understanding how they got there and what they did, if anything, that's positive or not so positive.
Well, Gene, one example of that, one glaring example, and it's one that I'm still going through. In fact, I'm involved in multiple projects all at the same time, which is just, that's just how I always am. I'm always involved in multiple projects. I'm reorganizing and refiling all the Project Blue Book material from Hynek. And I have to tell you, admittedly, you know, the Blue Book files, most if not all of those are now digitally online. But what gives you unique insight is holding the original documents that Hynek had. And what we see on the vast majority of these are red felt pen notations. And I'm talking about cases that go back to the early 50s. So long before we knew that Hynek's skepticism was beginning to erode the more he investigated the case. Even as early as the early mid-1950s, Hynek had very critical comments regarding the official explanations. In fact, there was one particular case, the official record card stated ball lightning as the explanation. Hynek crossed it out and underneath it in uppercase letters wrote unidentified and underlined it three times. And then continued by putting additional critical comments. He often would abbreviate Air Force with AF. Why didn't AF investigators track down other witnesses? Why didn't AF obtain radar data in this case? So you saw the frustration with regard to Hynek very early on with the official Air Force explanations.
We had a question from the forums from Richard Hawkins that kind of fits right here in this conversation. We were talking just a moment ago about the theories of Dr. D that they were, you know, Air Force projects and things. But based on what you've seen of Dr. Hynek's files and may have read about him, you mentioned his change from skepticism. What were his beliefs about his hypothesis for the origin of UFOs?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know if he really, at least in the early years, I don't know if he had formulated kind of a hypothesis or a working theory. Hynek was, by definition, a true scientist. You know, without putting a label on it, I think he just acknowledged that there was a phenomenon, whatever that was. But I don't know if he really had a pet theory. My friend and colleague Mark Rodiger would probably be able to answer that question with more authority, having worked directly under Hynek for many, many years. You know, I think Hynek was, in fact, a true scientist, much like James McDonald. I don't think James McDonald necessarily subscribed to the extraterrestrial hypothesis, although that was highly prevalent back during that era in the 50s and 60s. But, you know, much like myself, I don't know what these things are, but I think when we remove the large percentage of knowns, we're left with an unknown percentage of cases. And I don't think we need to label it anything, rather just simply say, this percentage of cases warrants further investigation. And that's what I've been trying to do over these years.
Can you pick any cases that suggest a particular origin? Because a lot of times people, I think they're making big leaps to get to extraterrestrial or military or whatever. You know, it's sort of based on a preconceived notion. But, you know, is there any evidence to support a particular origin?
Not that I can think of, but as you're asking me the question, Kurt, it got me thinking. I have to tell you, on a number of occasions, and I see this even now with contemporary reports online and commentary on social media, etc., people will say, well, you know, I saw this object, but it didn't look extraterrestrial. It looked man-made. Well, what are you using as a basis of comparison? Do we have something that we know is extraterrestrial as far as space vehicle or aerial vehicle that we can compare it to? I always love when people say, well, it didn't look extraterrestrial. To me, it looked like something military. It's just like, well, you know, how do we know what extraterrestrial technology looks like?
Sadly, most of our information comes from the movies.
Yeah, unfortunately.
As far, well, what about this, the cultural impact of the movies? You know, I think that's sometimes overstated, but there, you know, is in terms of science fiction, it beat flying saucers here, and all the notion of alien contact, you know, so I think there's been a big influence, but, you know, how much and how strong and how lasting do you think it's been?
Well, again, I think we have to concede that there are those pop culture influences that can influence people into believing they've seen a UFO or shaping their interpretation of what they've seen. But, you know, it's kind of the chicken and the egg. Quite often you'll say, well, people watch these movies and then they say they saw a flying saucer. But, you know, when you look at the actual movies, I mean, we can talk about amazing stories in the pulp magazines that were in the 30s and the 40s. That's a whole other story. But, you know, really, when you look at the movies of the 1950s, it was art imitating life. The flying saucer reports existed long before the flying saucer movies. And much like today, they capitalized on the interest in flying saucers because of the flying saucer reports that were so prevalent in the newspapers at the time. So, you know, it's the chicken and the egg, which came first. And I do concede that, you know, popular opinion can be shaped by things they see on television and they hear. But when people start making it blanket explanations, again, as I alluded to earlier, we need to be very careful about using blanket explanations for many of these.
Well, if we're still investigating and there's an ongoing phenomenon, we can't have final explanations. If, for example, it's ET, we can't have a final explanation unless we have ironclad physical evidence of otherworldly origin or the presence of alien bodies, which is allegedly what happened with Roswell, although, of course, sure, that seems to have died in terms of any evidence that someone can point to other than testimony. Sure. And something like that, or the physical presence of a mass landing where they come down and say, take me to your leader, or whatever. Other than that, we don't have proof. We can only make suggestions.
Absolutely. And just going back to the historical research I just finished, you know, these cases, as I mentioned, were from 47 to 77. And at the beginning of my lecture, I'll be mentioning to my audience that we have to keep in mind, in 1950, in the 1960s, you know, imagery of UFOs was the quintessential flying saucer. You know, it wasn't prevalent in the print media at the time. It wasn't even prevalent within UFO literature of triangular UFOs. It was a very, very small subset. Yet we have this consistent body of testimony and reporting worldwide of these triangles that have similar lighting characteristics and similar flight dynamics. So, you know, today, yes, people see reports on the internet and then they might fabricate a triangle. But in 1955, if you were wanting to fabricate a UFO story just to kind of, you know, have an aha moment on this UFO investigator, you wouldn't think that you would concoct a story describing a large silent triangle. You think you'd describe a 30-foot silver saucer with a little dome on top and retractable landing gear. But despite the fact that that was the prevalent imagery at the time, we do have reports of these triangular objects that bear striking similarity to the modern reports.
I would go back to something we said earlier about the way to reach people. So Chris Rutkowski recently wrote an article based on the premise of Googling, where do I report my UFO sighting? And in trying that, he found that there weren't a lot of good results. You would think that MUFON and NUFORC would be at the top of the list, but that you really had to search to find where to report a UFO. So what's your advice for someone who wants to report a UFO? How do they gather their information and share it?
Yeah, well, I think one of the, you know, certainly MUFON is one avenue, but I've known Peter Davenport for many years, the National UFO Reporting Center. I think Peter's done the lion's share of work of collecting a lot of these reports. I think the most important thing, though, is that they at least witnesses at least report the UFO sighting, because so many go officially unreported. Despite the fact we have thousands of case files, they're really table crumbs compared to the ones that we did not receive.
We're going to have a lot more with David Marler, who's also going to be on After the Paracast, our premium show, part of the Paracast Plus package. And if you're not yet a subscriber, it's real simple. Go to theparacast.plus. Theparacast.plus. We have all the sign-up information there. And if you use the coupon code UFO20, you get 20% off on lifetime and five-year subscriptions for the Paracast Plus. Our special guest co-host is Kurt Collins. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
I represent low-cost airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, Montana, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.